So Barack Obama, Tom Hanks, and Condoleezza Rice walk into a bar. What do? This isn't the beginning of a bad joke. And in fact, they may have something to talk about. All three are avowed fans of ESPN, the 24-hour sports reporting empire that started in 1979 as a big idea and now spans 8 channels, a magazine, online, mobile, and basically everywhere you look. Did you know that President Obama watches SportsCenter every night? So he says, well, a new book draws upon over 500 interviews with ESPN employees to tell the story of the network's rise and impact on American culture. James Andrew Miller co-wrote the book with Tom Shales, one of America's best-known TV critics and former NPR film critic. Miller and Shales also co-wrote a book about the history of Saturday Night Live, you may remember. And Miller's first book was about the United States Senate. James Andrew Miller is with me now. The new book is Those Guys Have All the Fun, Inside the World of ESPN. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Half our audience thinks it's the greatest thing to ever happen. Half our audience thinks it's the worst. Without having to offer your opinion, can you at least explain why it's important?
ESPN? Well, because they have become a worldwide brand in terms of communicating what sports is all about. And, of course, sports occupies a large presence on the American cultural landscape, and they are now in many ways defining and interpreting that for us because they're everywhere on many, many different kinds of platforms, many different networks, and, in fact, they're all over the world.
And, listeners, we have a little bit of time for calls. You can call in right now with your question about ESPN and its cultural impact for James Andrew Miller. And if you want to share your favorite ESPN moment or unfavorite ESPN personality or whatever, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, one person our listeners are probably familiar with, whether they watch ESPN or not, is Keith Olbermann. And his first big break, some people who watch politics television but not sports may not know, was as an anchor on ESPN. And I think there's a sense throughout your book that most people within the organization feel he was the greatest talent to come through the network. So let's take a quick listen to Olbermann hosting SportsCenter in 1996. You can hear his trademark delivery already forming.
Hello and welcome from World Headquarters. It's The Big Show, and alongside my tag team partner, Dan Patrick, I'm Keith Olbermann. In 1909, fresh off the back-to-back World Championships, the Chicago Cubs decided to get less cute. They took the Cubby Bear insignia from off their road uniforms. They not only did not win a third straight championship, they haven't won one since. The Giants won two series, changed unis in 1922, lost. Same with the A's in 1931. So while the two-time defending champion Houston Rockets were only officially on the verge of elimination on Sunday, their fate may have been sealed the day they changed uniforms.
Now, he didn't accuse Dick Cheney of being a war criminal. It was 1996. But what did you learn about Olbermann from doing this book?
Well, look, this is a guy who wrote a book at the age of 14, entered Cornell at 16, graduated at 20, and he has a lot of supporters, and he has some detractors. It turns out that there's basically few people who don't have an opinion about Keith.
You quote, for example, producer Bill Wolf from ESPN, saying he reinvented sportscasting by being the smartest guy who ever did it. You agree with that?
I think if he's not the smartest, he's certainly one of the smartest. Let me put it this way. When Mickey Mantle died and there was basically 15 minutes to air, you wanted Keith at the keyboard. He produced an amazing obit that night and, you know, encyclopedic mind, a love of and devotion to the game of baseball, unlike many others. And his presence at ESPN was pivotal for many reasons. I mean, he and Dan Patrick, who did the 11 o'clock show, they weren't, you know, the only ones to do it at such a high level, but he certainly they certainly garnered a lot of attention. He also was one of the first people to take on management at ESPN in a substantive way, a hallmark of his throughout his career of taking on management at various places.
How about the high energy, sometimes combative style? Did that come from him?
Absolutely. Of SportsCenter?
Yes.
No, I think that SportsCenter's DNA dates back to literally the opening night of ESPN. It was on September 7th, 1979, and people like Tom Meese and Chris Berman did it in the 80s and were great at it. Keith and Dan started in the early 90s, but there was also Bob Lee and Charlie Steiner and Robin Roberts. There were a lot of other people who, you know, were incredibly talented doing the show.
Do reporters and hosts at ESPN think of themselves as journalists or as fans?
I ask that question all the time. Actually, I don't say journalists are fans. Journalists are entertainers. Journalists are celebrities. And the truth is that it depends on who you're talking about. There are people who pride themselves, but people like Bob Lee pride themselves on being a journalist. I think that there are other people who might say that some of those people you see every day on ESPN are not journalists. They are entertainers. They are personalities. And by the way, at this point at ESPN's history, some of these people are just as big personalities as the athletes they cover.
There was actually a remarkable moment on ESPN over this past weekend. Not sure if you've seen this video floating around, but this is ESPN's Skip Bayless criticizing fellow reporter Chris Broussard about how the network has covered basketball superstar LeBron James.
Because you're way too close to have any objectivity.
I don't have objectivity.
You sold your journalistic soul to get close to LeBron so you can have a pipeline.
I've never sold
I didn't
my
do that.
Soul.
I have objectivity about it.
You do
I can
not.
Sit back. Yeah, I do.
First of all, that's a strong claim.
There's good news and bad news there for ESPN. The good news is it's incredibly entertaining. You got two high wattage guys going at it toe to toe. The bad news is that the ESPN culture, particularly under George Bodenheimer, really, really does not like people to go after each other, ESPN people to go after each other. They detest it. And so, for instance, when Tony Kornheiser turns into a fashion critic and says something about Hannah Storm's wardrobe, he gets 2 weeks of suspension.
Yeah, that was just recently, too.
Yes. So you don't like to talk ill of another employee.
The title of your book, and maybe we heard it in that clip, even as they were criticizing each other, there was a lot of laughing going on. Title of your book is Those Guys Have All the Fun, which implies a certain kind of party atmosphere. Now, the Gawker-run sports site Deadspin went through your book, and as any self-respecting Gawker-run site would, people know the website Gawker that gawks at the media, they compile the juiciest details. Tons of drinking, parties with strippers, inter-office affairs, drugs. Did any of this cross the line? Have there been lawsuits or arrests?
Well, you got to keep, time perspective in it, because a lot of those things happened in the 80s, and ESPN did a very good job. Well, sometimes not, but sometimes a very good job of wrestling some of these issues to the ground. I think it's fair to say that now more than ever, they are determined to make sure that the culture and the workplace is a safe place for everybody. I thought that one of the things that Deadspin didn't do was kind of like give a proper time frame on it. Yes, there were secretaries hooking, but it was in the 80s. And in fairness to the secretaries, they were doing it to pay for their coke habit. So you got to keep that in perspective.
What about the tone on the network? Several times in your book, people talk about the way in which ESPN helped break down the barrier between athlete and fan, bring them closer. And on the one hand, that's a good thing. But on the other hand, you illustrate how it starts a slippery slope towards snarkiness and sarcasm and a buddy-buddy kind of tone. So is it a good thing, bad thing? Do you miss the days of, Gay Talese writing reverentially about Joe DiMaggio in The New Yorker?
I mean, it's a tricky thing for them. I mean, look, so Ben Roethlisberger, the quarterback of the Steelers, comes up. He tapes a This Is SportsCenter commercial. Then he's featured at the ESPYs. And then lo and behold, he's indicted. So now all of a sudden that part of ESPN that's a news gathering organization that prides themselves on solid enterprise journalism has to cover this person that's been, very close to other parts of the company. It's a very difficult balancing act for them.
Right. And from a journalistic standpoint, I mean, you see people who are, let's say Major League Baseball players yesterday, if they're good talkers, they're on the ESPN Sunday Night Baseball coverage today or on the panel before or on SportsCenter or Baseball Tonight, whatever. These people are very close to the people they're covering. Can you do that?
Sometimes you can. I mean, look, it turns out that somebody said to me when Urban Meyer, the great college football coach, was thinking about retiring, I'm sure ESPN already has a deal with him. Well, guess what? He is on ESPN now. I mean, their tentacles are very, very far-reaching.
In talking to all these personalities, did you learn any lessons or refine your own perceptions about what makes a great sports anchor?
What makes a great sports anchor? It's funny because some of the things that we thought were important, like being very funny and very, very caustic and very, very loud. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be all those things to be a great sports anchor. I think one of the things that's really interesting now at ESPN is that people with different personalities are finding ways to succeed and finding their own fan base. Somebody like Chris Fowler, you know, I mean, is not a flamboyant, you know, screaming, yelling kind of guy, but he goes to the World Cup. He delivers great reporting there. He does tennis. He does, you know, he does a great job there. You don't have, and of course on College Game Day, you don't have to be a certain type in order to be successful.
On getting too close to your subject, lots of political reporters skip the White House Correspondents' Dinner for fear of seeming too buddy-buddy. ESPN actually hosts its own award show.
Right, exactly. I mean, sometimes, you know, there's a quote in the book about somebody from the league saying that when they decided to debut Texas Stadium, they decided to go with NBC because it would be about the game. If they went with ESPN, it would be about ESPN. I mean, whether that's fair or not, I think that's the perception out there.
You previously wrote a book about the U.S. Senate, so you're obviously interested in serious things. You also wrote a book about Saturday Night Live. Where does this book, and we have about 45 seconds left, about ESPN fit in for you? What question were you really trying to answer that's important?
I guess it's one of the great media success stories of all time. And the big question was, how did it get that way? I mean, what were some of the, you know, what were some of the dramatic moments in its history that enabled it to get so big and so successful? And what are these people like that we watch on TV? What are they like behind the scenes? And what are they like when they're not being watched?
What's the best thing about ESPN and the worst thing about ESPN after all of this in our last 15 seconds?
The best thing is that it's available all the time and they basically have no shortage of product. And the worst thing is it's available all the time.
And they have no shortage of
ego.
Kids who want and ego and kids who want to watch 24 hours a day.
Right.
All right. The book is called Those Guys Have All the Fun Inside the World of ESPN. James Andrew Miller is the co-author with Tom Shales. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.